And welcome to another edition of the Mojo Break Dugout Session. Cody with you alongside Doug, and we've got another week of baseball to talk about. A lot of interesting young players who are coming up in the ranks. A lot of guys who are seeing their card values skyrocket right now. So, Doug, I think that would be a great place to start. Who are some of those guys that maybe are starting to see their value rise? Some guys that maybe are a little under the radar to start the season here.
Absolutely. And we just got done. We previewed last week some Topps Chrome. We went through a few cases, not just Jumbo. We also did Hobby. So we're pulling some great rookie autos out of there. It's a fun rip. We're going to be having more Topps Chrome at MojoBreak.com this week. I think the design really kind of pops with how they have the border on the one side and then the auto on the right side. Just looks great. You're seeing Luis Robert pop out. You're seeing a lot of Kyle Lewis. And you're seeing, you know, color and stuff like that. So it's kind of baseball's roots. Baseball collecting roots is Topps Chrome. So definitely get in on those breaks at MojoBreak.com. But as far as guys, I think we've got our first segment. We're going to talk a little Tatis. And we're going to talk a little Bieber.
Yeah, a little buy or sell here as we're now, can you believe we're already a quarter of the way through the MLB season?
Insane.
It still feels like a lot of teams are just kind of getting their footing, but here we are. It's a strange season. COVID has made this season very, very weird, but I think the thing that sticks out is that the young guys that have been on the rise the last few years and the guys that have become household names to collectors are starting to fulfill that potential, and you mentioned it. The guy right at the top of the list. He's Fernando Tatis Jr.
Yep.
He is leading all of Major League Baseball right now, coming into today with 8 home runs. He looks sensational. I think ESPN just did a huge cover story on him on their website today. He is very, very quickly becoming the face of baseball, but I think for collectors, he already has been the face of Major League Baseball collecting right now. Obviously, you'll see some of the numbers we're putting up here. The cards are selling for ridiculous prices. They have been selling for crazy prices. You see his draft pick rookie card going for, I mean, 20 grand. It just sold for very recently. So these are huge numbers. So I guess this is less about a buy or sell here. If you're lucky to have one, I'm sure buying one is maybe a little tougher to come around right now. But if you are lucky to have a Tatis card right now, especially a Tatis auto, are you hanging on to that card right now, or are you trying to capitalize on the success early on for Tatis?
At this moment, I think I'm holding. I mean, if you look at his last week, he had a home run Monday, a double Tuesday, a home run Wednesday. He was off Thursday, and then Friday, a leadoff home run. Saturday, leadoff home run. I mean, this guy is just literally exploding right in front of our eyes. For collectors, you can find his rookie card in 2019. You can find his first Bowman in 2016. So you might be able to get some 2019 product. I'm looking at some of it right now, seeing where I can get the best 2019 product value-wise. Because you also have Vlad Jr. that we're not really talking about that you can hit as well. But, you know, maybe there's some wax out there that's undervalued that you can get a good Tatis. And, you know, obviously his flagship series rookie is going to be the number one card, the 2019, the base rookie. But there's all different ways you can go. You can even look at some of the Sapphire stuff he has. You can kind of see, because those are eventually all going to go up with this continuing the way he's been playing. I mean, it's just been literally insane.
Yeah, he's been more than I think what even his top fans were expecting. He's just been sensational on and off the field, too. He's such a guy that baseball needs right now. Such a vibrant star, so full of energy. He's fun. I mean, the bat drops. I'm loving the bat drops.
Oh, yeah. That flip he had was just incredible.
Gosh. Yeah, and doing it well. We'll talk about him a little later, doing that against Madison Bumgarner. I'm sure he wasn't very happy about it, but the way he's pitching right now, maybe can't really say.
What do you think to stop on this bat knob? Bat knob. I'm thinking cards, but bat flips. It seems like as we go along, it's a little bit more, you know, we had the Batista flip and then he got punished for that by the other team. I mean, I think it's becoming more and more accepted. I mean, baseball's got that generation of like, you know, get off my lawn type thing. We got to uphold the rules. We got to respect the game. But if you look at the other sports, you got football guys, you know, doing dances and pictures and all that stuff that they're doing now. Basketball's always been about the fist pump. But baseball, it's like, I like it. I like the energy, especially when my guy does it. If I'm following, like, say maybe I had Tatis in a FanDuel, You know, I'm loving that, you know? So I think there needs to be more of that personally.
You know, I think the thing to think about now is how long ago was that Bautista thing, that the bat flip around the world? Now it's almost been, what, 5 years since that happened? So you've got a generation of guys who probably who got drafted this year who were like in seventh or eighth grade when that bat flip happened. So now they've just grown up with it. Like, this is what they know. So I think you're going to start to see, as the league gets younger, it's already happening. You saw Ronald Acuña Jr. went off this weekend. He's a guy who definitely likes to have some flair when he plays. So it's going to become part of the fabric of the game. And then, you know, 20, 30 years from now, they're going to figure out some new way. Some guys are going to be doing somersaults and cartwheels around the bases. Go ahead. Yep. You want to throw your bat, you know, about 30 feet away, go ahead. But
if you're Acuña, if you're going to flip that bat, you got to make sure you run out a fly ball as well.
Yeah, there's that too. There's that too. Well, going on the pitching side, you mentioned his name. We talked about him last week too. Shane Bieber, who has just been – if Fernando Tatis Jr. is probably your MVP of the season so far in the National League, I think Shane Bieber is far and away your American League Cy Young winner right now. He pitched Sunday night, his last start against the Chicago White Sox, 8 more strikeouts to add on to his total of 43 and 27 and two-thirds inning. He's a real deal. That breaking ball is filthy. And I think this is a guy that he's been on a lot of baseball fans' minds. I don't know if he was first and foremost when he first got called up by Cleveland, but you see the difference here. A couple of slides are going to put up. Back in July, this card goes for $225. The same card just a week ago, you see the price jump to $775. It's sensational. Similar card going for a huge, huge jump in price for Shane Bieber. So another guy where are you looking to get in on the Bieber train right now? Is this a guy that you try to capitalize, or a guy that you think, hey, maybe if he can pocket another Cy Young or a couple Cy Youngs down the road, this is a guy you want maybe 10 years down the road and really get that investment?
Well, and you know, I'm not a believer. When he came in the league, obviously he had a lot of comparisons to Justin, just for reasons of his last name.
Yeah,
but you know, being in this hobby for the last 10 years, we had the last big pitcher that really sold, that really pushed the needle as far as sales, was Steven Strasburg. Then we had the Tommy John situation. People kind of moved away. Pitchers play every 5 games. What the really big shame about Bieber here is we're not gonna see what would happen during a full season, 162 games. So you're not gonna get that crazy stat you would see if he played the whole season. Like, if he played 162 games, 30 starts, broke some records, then you might be able to say, okay, yeah, I'm glad I invested in him. But you're not gonna see that. I mean, the only kind of thing that's gonna maybe move the needle is if the Indians go deep in the playoffs. He's in a big Madison Bumgarner type game, and maybe he wins the game on his own. But even then, if you look at Madison Bumgarner's pricing, they're nothing. They're not even close to Bieber's pricing. And you got a guy that maybe single-handedly won the 2014 World Series, and a guy that's, you know, really probably can arguably be the best postseason pitcher of all time with his ERA and his, what, he went so many innings without getting in, you know, without giving up a run. So that's what makes me bullish on the pitcher market. Now, the hobby changes constantly, so it's something to keep in mind. I'm not saying there's no pockets where you can sell a pitcher and make some money. Obviously, we're seeing that right now with Bieber, but I feel like his prices right now are a strong sell.
Yeah, I think, and you mentioned it with Strasburg, a guy who was probably the most hyped pitcher coming out of the draft of his era, and he has become a spectacular pitcher. But there have been so many bumps in the road along the way. And with pitchers' health, you just never know when things can change on a dime so fast with pitchers and their luck. And one Tommy John surgery could derail everything, a bad shoulder, whatever it may be. I mean, we're familiar with it. We saw Tim Lincecum take the league by storm in a matter of 4 years. And then in a matter of 1 year, he was done.
Yeah.
So it's, especially with pitching, it can be so tough to really predict how things are going to play out. Not everybody is Max Scherzer or Justin Verlander, who can last, you know, when they're 36, 37 and still cranking at 97 miles per hour. So we'll see. If Bieber can keep this up, we'll see. But that's such a huge if. Now, I want to talk about a few guys who I think are really good buy low candidates right now. One guy who's actually a teammate of Fernando Tatis Jr., that would be Trent Grisham. If you don't know the name, he was acquired by the Padres in a sort of a quiet move last offseason. He gets called up by the Brewers last year, and had some good numbers, but was a top-rated prospect when he first got drafted. Kind of fell off in the minor leagues. Picked things back up last year. Padres decide, let's take a chance on him. He's actually looked very good. 4 home runs for the Padres so far in a couple of weeks. I think this guy is the real deal in center field. And his cards right now, not going for a huge amount. I think you see right there about $50, $51 for his draft pick auto. If you're looking for a good investment, I really think Trent Grisham and really a lot of San Diego Padres, their farm system is just stacked, would be a really nice investment.
I don't disagree because, you know, you're going to get to the point where if Tatis continues this run that he's going to be – people are going to be priced out of buying Tatis. Yeah. So they could obviously move down into Grisham, and Grisham could be – you know, obviously he's going to be affected and be doing well in that lineup with a guy like Tatis in that lineup. So you're going to see kind of a combo situation with that going down. So I think, yeah, I mean, if you can get in at those prices, you know, this hobby changes daily. They may have gone up by the time we're talking, but if you can get in those prices, I think it's a decent investment to throw to just grab a few of them.
Yeah, just being in that same lineup, like you mentioned, with Tatis, there's going to be a lot of guys who are going to benefit just from hitting, you know, behind him or ahead of him. There's going to be a lot of runs scored, a lot of offense, I think, for the San Diego Padres' future.
Well, and not to jump backwards, but if you think about that trade now, so the White Sox could have had Tatis. They basically traded for James Shields. And, you know, James Shields is, you know, hit or miss on his pitching. And you could have had a lineup with Eloy, Luis Robert, and, you know, Tatis in that lineup.
Yeah.
Man.
Madrigal. Yeah, it's just it's crazy how much young talent that team could have had. And they already have such incredible young talent in Chicago.
Insane.
Yeah, what could have been. Gosh, for James Shields, that's one that might go down as one of the worst trades in Major League history when it's all said and done.
No doubt.
Another one. What might be, I think we alluded to it last week, the Dansby Swanson trade for Shelby Miller. A guy who also was included in that trade is a guy I think is another good buy low candidate. That would be Touki Toussaint, who is now going to be given a much bigger chance. You also see Ian Happ in that picture, another guy I think is a good buy low candidate. But to start with Touki, he's a guy that has been really has had a failure to launch really in the major league level. Now with Mike Soroka out, now with Mike Foltynewicz designated for assignment with Atlanta, he's being given a huge opportunity. He had his best start of his career against the Blue Jays last week. I think his strikeout rate, even though he has not hit that innings pitched mark qualifiers yet, I think he's about fourth or fifth in all of the National League right now with about 13 strikeouts per 9 innings. I think this guy has everything, has all the tools. His stuff looked fantastic last week. I think he's got all the tools to become a really big factor for Atlanta. And then for Ian Happ, another guy that I think has been a late hype guy, a guy who I think a lot of people were really into early on. He was at the top of a lot of baseball prospect lists. And I think it's easy to forget, especially after that rookie season where he's great. He's kind of fallen off in a couple of years since, but he's been maybe the best offensive player on the Chicago Cubs, a 10-3 team. They didn't play over the weekend, but still one of the best teams in the National League. Another guy that I think would be a really good buy low candidate right now.
Yeah, and absolutely. And there's people that collect, and if you're, you know, a Cubs fan or a Braves fan, you're probably already buying these just to hold on to them forever because you're collecting your team. But if you've noticed here, we've picked out teams that are contending. And the beauty of this season, if you are collecting to flip, maybe you're buying a couple and then you're going to sell a couple and you're going to, you know, just to kind of supplement buying more stuff, you know, you kind of could you obviously stick into teams that are doing it. And because it's a shortened season, you know, this is a lot faster. It's about 3 to 4 times faster. So, you know, if you do the math, you're doing, you know, each game is the equivalent of 3 to 4 games. So it happens so much faster this year. So it's a different ball game being that there's only a 60 game season. And, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, are what, 16 teams are going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, there could be a guy that's, you know, on nobody's radar right now that could knock off the first seed and then all of a sudden the hobby, and then it's too late, you know. So you could use these early stats to kind of build some guys, and then when the time is right, you could definitely flip. Touki Toussaint, I don't disagree with you, but we did book Touki to do a break with us in Arizona, and then his agent got involved, and it got a little messy, so a little near and dear to the heart. I wouldn't endorse Touki personally, but I think with pitchers, you can definitely, like we just mentioned with Bieber, you can catch that little wave. Yeah. I think long-term, it's definitely could be risky because of the Tommy John factor. Obviously, don't hope Tommy John on anybody, but it seems like it's almost inevitable these days with elbow soreness, the way these guys are throwing, you know, 100 miles an hour fastball. So it does happen. And then, you know, with hitters, they could have one bad game. Yelich could go 0-for-4. Well, then he's playing the next game. So then he's going to go, you know, he could go 3-for-4 and everybody forgets about the 0-for-4 the day before. A pitcher, you know, could get lit up and then it's 5 days before he plays again. Right. So there's a lot more time for hobbyists to stew on it. I'm not saying there's definitely some buy or sell pockets right there. If a guy has a really bad game, maybe you do buy it low. But, you know, you have to, it seems like you have to wait so much more for a pitcher to play again to right the wrongs rather than investing in some hitters.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, and it's like you said, it's a short season. So, you know, let's say he does have a good season in what, maybe 10 starts, 12 starts, and he looks great and maybe he's selling well over the offseason. And then next year he just hits a wall. It is never the same guy right. again. So that window could be really even shorter than it usually is. But I'll remember Tuki Susan on the Mojo Break naughty list.
You know, we were I think it was like in what, 13 or 14, maybe around that time. And we had we have a Mojo Arizona representative that was going out to a lot of fall league games and basically working out deals for guys to come. We would buy their lunch, pay whatever they wanted to break cards with us just to get some players in front of you guys. And he had committed, and then it might not have been a fault of his own, but then his agent, you know, sent us all this stuff and wanted X amount per hour and stuff like that. And it's just like, all right.
Yeah. You need a couple of all-star appearances under your belt till you can big league some guys like
that. Right, no, right. Exactly. I mean, you're
still a rookie. Come
exactly. And, you know, we did breaks with Nick Williams, with Tyler Glass now and stuff. Yeah. And that was going to be that same event that Tukey was going to do. And, you know, we were letting these guys promote their Instagram and all this stuff and get their brand out there. And it was definitely a mutual fun event. And unfortunately, the agent probably was like, you know, I need to get paid. I can't let you do an appearance without me getting paid. So, you know, that's how it goes. I know how the business works. Yeah,
exactly. Well, let's shift our focus to what's going on the field for Major League Baseball. And I think once again, like we talked about a week ago, this tour of shame, the walk of shame for the Houston Astros continues. It all came to a head again yesterday in Oakland. The A's and the Astros, the A's actually sweep the Astros, and we'll talk about them a little more in depth later on. But later on in the game, Ramon Laureano, one of the really best up-and-coming center fielders in all of baseball right now, mm-hmm. he gets hit, the fifth A's player to be hit in the entire series. And then things got ugly, and it was actually Alex Cintron, the former Arizona Diamondback, now a coach for the Houston Astros, who started talking some mess from the Astros dugout and said, "You want a piece of me? Come and get some," and got blocked, of course, by three Astros players as Laureano charged him. Another brawl ensued. A lot more contact here than what we saw with the Dodgers and the Astros, and I think the big difference here, clearly, is that Dodgers-Astros one, that was instigated by the Dodgers. That was a revenge moment right there. Whereas this felt like the Astros are kind of falling apart, and it seems like they are letting the outlook that baseball and its fans have for them really start to eat at them. They're struggling on the field, and clearly they're struggling to keep their composure right now.
Yeah, I mean, what's that great saying, speak softly and carry a big stick? Mm-hmm. That's definitely not what they're doing here. They're letting everything affect them. You know, and maybe not all the guys on the team cheated, but we don't know. We really don't know. You know, the coach, Cintron, is kind of like me. If I ever got into a fight against an MMA player, I'd probably push a bunch of people in front of me to not fight said player. I feel like that's what it was. It's like, I'm going to be big and bad, but when it came down to it, I'm not going to go after Laureano. So, it was an interesting scenario. I think the A's where they're at, they probably shouldn't. Laureano should have just shrugged it off. But you know, there's some tension. The A's probably feel like they were slighted from possibly going farther in the playoffs, totally. You know? So especially being in their division. Now, I don't know if it's a situation where the Astros felt like they needed to retaliate because the whistleblower was on the A's. That's what it kind of seems like. I mean, they probably won't say that in public, but that's what I think is going on is it's funny that the A's they didn't hit any batters and the Astros hit five, and the Astros are the ones they need to kind of clean up their image. So it's a very interesting dynamic that's going on. And the Astros aren't playing terrible ball. They're not playing Oakland A's ball, but you know, but I guess, you know, for everybody that likes getting their popcorn ready, I mean, that was a get your popcorn moment. It led off ESPN. I got several notifications about it. So Manfred may hand down some suspensions. I can't even talk. Maybe to Laureano, but I think in the back of his mind, he's like, it's not COVID, so this is good.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think that you're onto something with the Mike Fiers situation. Of course, he was the guy who came out in that article that started this all in The Athletic back in the offseason, where he was saying this is what happened while I was with the Astros. And he also got lit up, of course, last year. I think the Astros scored like 11 runs in like an inning and two-thirds against him. So he clearly had a beef with the team even before all this. So I think there is that a little bit, but I really do think that this is starting to eat at these players and at their legacy, really. It's a lot of these young guys who, you know, for years we heard about all the hype surrounding the Astros, about Carlos Correa and Bregman and Alvarez and all these rookie players who were going to be the face of this franchise and become the next dynasty in baseball. And I think that for many of them, they feel like that's probably forever tarnished. And I think for a lot of them, they're just annoyed. They're like, it's August, man. Like, I know the season just started, but it's been almost a year since this all broke. Let's all move on. And I think clearly MLB and the teams and their fans are not going to move on from it. And I think it's something that's going to last until next year. And when fans hopefully can come back to the stands and come back to the games, and they're going to hear it. I don't think fans are going to forget. These fans clearly didn't forget. We saw there was a plane that flew over the stadium that said that had something about the Astros cheating. I believe there were even a few members of the media who decided to come down into the stands on Friday night and boo the Astros because no fans were there to do it. So people are mad, and justifiably so. And I think the Astros got to get their composure and figure it out, because they're still a good team. It doesn't take away from the fact they're a good team. They're a talented team, but it's just going to keep happening until one, MLB does something about it, and two, they just swallow their pride and say, okay, it happened. We know what we did. People are going to think the way they think, and we just got to go play.
And that's the thing. Like, if you're a season ticket holder in Seattle and you got maybe, you know, a bullpen, seat, or, you know, wherever the stadium is, and you're going to be on camera, I'm sure those guys looked when the Astros were coming to town, made the sign, and were ready. Well, now the sign probably didn't get thrown away. It's a situation where, like, when next year, then I'm going to use the sign. So everybody's waiting. Nobody's going to forget. Maybe a few people forget, but I think anybody that's that devout of a fan, especially Dodger fans, I mean, you're going to see those signs. You're going to have to knock the dust off of them because they're going to be in people's closets for this year. But when there's allowed to have fans out there or wherever there may be a public appearance, those signs are going to get used, and the Astros are just prolonging the shame tour.
Yeah, exactly. We saw it with guys with steroid allegations that it never went away. The talk about it and the fervor around it kind of quieted down as their careers went on, but it never goes away. And I think it's going to be the same with the Astros, and they're just going to have to find a way to cope with this. And one final note here, because I think it is bears mentioning, obviously, there's going to be big time suspensions handed down. Loreano is probably going to get suspended. I'd imagine Alex Cintron is going to get suspended. I actually think Rob Manfred, if that Joe Kelly suspension seemed really harsh, just wait and see until this happens, especially after the Cardinals situation is getting out of control with COVID. Obviously, we know about the Marlins, and I think that he is going to have to put his foot down and say, look, we're going to hand out, 10-game suspension, something like that, something really extreme for a position player especially.
Yeah, I mean, God forbid there be a big brawl and then five guys get COVID afterwards, right? So that's another thing.
Yeah, I think he wants to really – I think he's going to send a message with this one. And unfortunately, Ramon Laureano might be the guy on the short end of that. And
do you think he's going to get more games than Kelly?
You know, just because he's a position player, I do. I think that he's going to get at least, I would say, bare minimum, he gets the same as Kelly, eight games. And I think he's going to send a harsher message, because I think the Joe Kelly suspension was a message to all of baseball saying, we're not messing around. We're taking this seriously. We told you guys not to get in fights, not to have contact with each other with these brawls. And at least that one, there wasn't a lot of physical contact. There was with this one. Yeah. Guys were rolling around. So I think that especially with everything going on with the Cardinals, I think he has to send a message.
Do you think that one last point on this? Do you think when Manfred and these guys, these league officials, look at the tape, do they look at each hit by pitch and be like, he tipped his hat, he must not have meant it, or, you know, that one looks like it was intentional. Yeah. I mean, I think you got to look at that, right? So
yeah.
I didn't see the five hit by pitches. I didn't see those at bats. But you could you could usually tell when a guy's doing it on purpose, yeah, or it's a pitch that got away from him, right?
I mean, one or two in a series, it's two or three even, right, five in a series, especially with teams that have already got a lot of tension. I think there is something there to, yeah, for lack of a better term. So maybe that also factors into how much they suspend Laureano. And yeah, we'll see. But I think that he is going to let the hammer.
Think about this, though. What if this, I mean, I'm not saying it is, but what if this is the Astros' game plan, to be like, you know what, we're going to be hated, we're going to get beaned sometimes, but if we get in under some of these teams' skin, I mean, look, if they lose Laureano, they're the first place team right now. Yeah. And if the Astros lose their bench coach, I mean, who's on the winning side of this?
That's a great point.
You know, the Astros are basically on the winning side of this now. So, you know, I'm not saying they're doing that as a strategy, but it'd be a very, very dirty strategy. But, I mean, well, you know, you go around and you start taking out the best players on each team. It's a shortened season.
Yeah. I mean, are we going to really put that past a team that just cheated their way to a World Series to have a dirty strategy to approach this season? I think there are crazier things have happened.
Right.
So let's stick with those two teams. I'm going to run down a few teams here that I think have been some of either the more surprising teams on the side of success, and then some of the more disappointing teams. And I guess a little bit of contender-pretender here. Let's start with the A's and the Astros. The Oakland A's, as a team, just talking about their team performance, I think probably the best in baseball right now. They have the longest winning streak coming into today with 9 straight victories for the Oakland A's. 5 of their bullpen pitchers have not given up a single run. They've all pitched, I think, over at least 5 games so far, and have posted an ERA of exactly 0. Their rotation has been spectacular. Lizardo, Frankie Montas, Chris Bassett. Lizardo, of course, a guy who has come up through that system and has been expected to do big things. I think this team is for real. I think the A's had a moment here, even before all the COVID stuff. They saw this season, I think, as a moment where they had to win now, because Marcus Semien's a free agent. A lot of these guys, Chapman, Olson, their contracts are going to be expiring in the next coming years. So I think this A's team may be your top contender right now in the American League, the way they're playing.
I would love to see it. But, you know, I mean, the years of Billy Ball, and you just see how they come. The A's always get hot. I mean, the movie was made about how many games in a row they won. But it just literally seems like they're always a superstar too short of a big moment. When the big moment happens, and I don't know how many years in a row or how many years they've gotten knocked out of that first wild card game.
Too many to count.
Yeah, yeah, too many to count. So you're waiting for that to happen, especially as a Giants fan. Maybe I look at it to happen more often. I don't hate the Oakland A's. I would love nothing more for them to get to the World Series and win another one. It's been a long time. I would love to see it, but it just seems like, who's going to be performing in that big moment? Is it going to be Chris Davis? He's not having a great season. Yeah. Who's it going to be? You know, if you look at other teams, like you look at the Yankees, yeah, Stanton or Judge can win a series for those guys. So that's what I'm waiting to see. I'm hopeful that the A's, yeah, right now on paper, they're looking like the best team in baseball. But in that moment, in that one, because if there's going to be another one game playoff, you know, and a lot of baseball purists will say that one game playoff is weak. It should be a 3-game. I don't necessarily disagree to that point, but at some point, the A's have to get that monkey off their back. And if it happens this year, will it be, you know, asterisk? I don't know, but at the end of the day, yes, I hope the A's, you know, do it, but it's like I need to see it to believe it.
Yeah, I think maybe one of the benefits for them, less time to sort of dwell on the past with the 60-game season. If you're hot coming into a short period of the season, you stay hot in the playoffs. So yeah. I think there's just less time, really, sure, is something that is ultimately the way they're playing going to work in their favor. The team on the other side, of course, of the brawl we talked about, on the Houston Astros, they're off to a 6-9 start, I believe, coming into today. They have been not terrible, but they've lost 5 in a row. Justin Verlander is hurt. Gerrit Cole, of course, left over the offseason. Other than Zach Greinke and maybe a couple other guys, they don't really have much in the way of starting pitchers right now. I think Lance McCullers is finally back, but he's struggling. The offense has struggled, Alex Bregman especially. But this, again, I think is just a bit of a bump in the road. The A's are a really good team. The Astros are going to be facing the Giants next, who have had their struggles as of late. So, to me, a bump in the road, and the guy you see there, Dusty Baker, I think is a big reason why this team, I think, is going to turn things around. He is a guy I respect immensely, a great manager, one of the best in all of baseball.
And one of the greatest regular season managers.
Oh,
of all time.
There's that too. I hope he can get over that hump. But it would be a little bittersweet to see him get over that hump with a team like the Astros, who have been mired in controversy.
Well, Dusty's the only guy in the top 10 in wins that does not have a World Series championship. Which, you know, it's weird, as you have that, and we've talked about Dusty on this podcast before, but you got that, you know, you got that Cubs situation, you know, obviously with the Bartman thing, and then you have the Giants situation shortly after that, and then you have Bryce Harper, or arguably in his prime, and close to 100 game win seasons that just never worked out for Dusty either. So I do, yeah, I love Dusty, I respect Dusty, I hope he gets it, but there's also a part of me that said life would not be fair if the Astros won this year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's just all that happened and that big offseason that made baseball look terrible, that if the Astros win, I don't know, you know?
It's like the old, you got the monkey's paw and you say, man, I wish Dusty Baker had a World Series. And then, no, not that way. Not with the Astros. Like,
right.
So,
right. Yeah, I know. And then, but that probably was the perfect hire because it was the guy had no cloud really behind him, a guy that everybody respects. And I give kudos to Dusty for basically taking that job because I guarantee 90% of the well-established coaches that maybe had like a Bobby Cox, I don't think any of those guys would have taken that that gig.
Yeah, it's a tough gig, and I you know, respect for him to do it, but that's
and how and he's getting up there, right? He's got to be.
Yeah, he's up there. He's well into his 70s, I would think, at this point. I'm not sure offhand, but. Yeah, he's getting up there. So this is probably his last gig, I would imagine. So,
and you can't question his love for baseball when he takes that job.
No.
So
that is a selfless job.
He lives, breathes, eat baseball if he's going to take that gig.
Yep.
Granted, I mean, there's a lot of talent on that team. So, I mean, it could be a worse gig. But
yeah,
you know.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot worse gigs in baseball right now. That's for sure.
Yep.
Let's talk about a team we talked about last week, the Colorado Rockies, who I frankly am a little surprised we're still talking about. I know it's still early, but it's kind of late already in the season. Mm-hmm. So, but the Rockies might have the best pitching staff in all of baseball right now. They're basically going with a four-man staff of, Cal Freeland. You got Germán Márquez, who's been very good for them, Senzatella, and John Gray. They might be the best rotation in all of baseball. Charlie Blackman's leading the league in on-base percentage and in batting average right now.
He may be one of the most underrated guys in the league.
Absolutely.
A couple All-Star appearances already, flirting. Didn't he flirt with a 30-30 or a 40-40 one year?
Gold glove caliber player.
Yeah, he's definitely on the most. I mean, I don't know what his card's at. Maybe that's a segment for next show, but that might be a guy. I mean, this guy's performed for many years. It almost feels like when Yelich was doing it with the Marlins and nobody really took notice, and then finally he had a couple breakout years on the Brewers and everybody started taking notice. Then it was too late to invest in his cards. But Charlie Blackman, I was waiting for you to mention him, and he's just been one of those guys that's just been solid, you know.
The crazy thing about all this and why I think this Astros team is for real, one, you've got 16 teams in the playoffs, so they have a great chance. As long as they finish second or, you know, eighth best in the league, they're going to be in. But Nolan Arenado has not turned it on yet. He had some good games, of course, against the Giants because that's what he always does against them. But he still is batting under 200. He's not swung for a lot of power early on. He's still playing great defense, but, man, if he can turn it on with the way Blackman's hitting, with the way this team is pitching, look out. I think Colorado Rockies are a dark horse.
I'm briefly looking at some of their pitching stats. You got, Senzatella, Márquez. I mean, these guys are all under three. There's nine guys under three. Granted, some of them haven't pitched that many innings, but there's guys that, you know, Germán Márquez, 26 innings with a 2.08 or ERA. I mean, so that's a – And that's the irony of the Rockies having a great pitching staff because, you know, obviously Coors Field's always been a hitter's ballpark. They've done things with the humidors or whatever they call those things over the years. And it's ironic that they're winning baseball games with pitching.
I think even more ironic because, look, I'm not pointing any fingers. I'm not naming any names. But it kind of feels like the ball's jumping a little farther this year.
It does.
I've been seeing a lot of second deck home runs. A lot more than I'm used to. And I'm like, is it just because there's no fans in the stands that they look like they're being hit further? But I've already seen Tatis hit like three in places at Petco Park. I didn't even think were possible to hit them. So, I don't know.
Juice ball theory definitely could be in play. I know we don't want to say it, but, You know, baseball is more obviously the exciting part of baseball is the long ball.
Yeah.
So,
You know what? So to me, even more credit to where credit's due for the Colorado Rockies for being able to pitch with the juice ball era in Colorado right now.
Right.
On the other side of things, pitching woes in Arizona, specifically Madison Bumgarner, who has just fallen off a cliff. He's getting evaluated back home in Arizona. Apparently he had back spasms in his loss against San Diego on Sunday. I think he has given up the most home runs in all of baseball so far. Seven home runs, and a 9.35 ERA. Those are both worst for qualifying pitchers in baseball. But to lay off him a little bit, it's not just been him. Robbie Ray, the team's number two starter, has a 9.45 ERA coming into his start tonight. It's been rough for this team. They're not pitching well, giving up the long ball like crazy. They're not hitting all that well. And boy, this is a team. I thought this was a playoff contender. I thought this Arizona team had the pieces to make the playoffs, but it's that top of the rotation is just completely falling apart.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure they closed rodeos down, so we can't use that. You know what I mean?
No excuse.
Not because of the rodeos, but man, I mean, small sample size so far, but the Giants literally looked like they used him until he was pretty much done at this point. But we'll see. He could turn it around. I mean, he's always a, you know, big, strong guy that, you know, once he gets one or two of his pitches going and then the other ones fall into place too. So, I mean, he's usually able to fight through the adversity. He's had many of these stretches with the Giants and then gotten down to a, you know, sub 3 RA by All-Star break, whatever. I know this is a shortened season. We're not going to have an All-Star break, but, you know. So interesting to see. Yeah, the Diamondbacks shocked me too. And the Diamondbacks are one of those teams, like they spent money on Greinke. They went out and they got Bumgarner. They let JD Martinez go after his best season. It's just like, as a Diamondback fan, you almost feel bad. It's just like they're trying to make the right decisions, but at the end of the day, they just don't work out. You know, they what did they give up Greinke? Did they just not sign him and then he went to the Astros, or did they trade him?
I believe they traded him away. Yeah, they traded him away. And there's been a lot of that. I mean, they've had a lot of shakeup in the front office. Remember that moment where Dave Stewart was there leading the front office? So there's been a lot of regime changes. So a lot of these moves that were going to be these big long-term moves haven't stuck. And I think they finally got into a groove where it was like they're making nice moves, getting Christian Walker to replace Paul Goldschmidt. Turned out to be a great move last year. There was a lot of nice moves this offseason. Starlin Marte, I thought, was a great sneaky move. Mm-hmm. And Bumgarner was really not even a huge splash. It was just like, let's get a guy to solidify this rotation of a lot of good, solid young starters. And it just has not worked out the way they had planned right now. So I think they still have time to turn things around. I like a lot of the bats on that team, but the pitching has got to step it up. And especially the top of that rotation, Robbie Ray and Madison Bumgarner, until some of those younger guys, and they've had guys opt out too, which has really hurt their chances. But until those guys are back and those younger guys can get back on track, those guys are going to have to carry the weight, and it just is not happening right now.
Yeah, and they have, I mean, honestly, if I had to pick a favorite non-Giant jersey, some of their uniform, their jerseys are some of my favorites. So,
yeah, okay.
You know, I like, and I love, and I just got to tour the stadium about 7 months ago.
It's a great park.
Beautiful stadium. You got that pool that unfortunately the Dodgers, urinated in, but it's a great piece to see. You watch the game in the pool, and you don't see that at many ballparks, right? So, I love the stadium, and then the owner has some of the craziest collection of cards in all of this hobby. I mean, he has the Gretzky Wagner, the Honus Wagner that was Gretzky's to begin with, and now he has it. He has, I think, a PSA 10 51 Bowman Willie Mays. I got to see him like in person, and I could not believe how much money was literally on the table. I mean, of this guy's collection. So that's one of the cool things that I've always loved about the Diamondbacks is that their owner is a card collector.
That's fantastic. I miss it. I miss the days where that field was called the Bob. That's one of my favorite nicknames in all of baseball. So in my heart, it's still the Bob. Our last two teams I want to talk about here, the Miami Marlins, who, shocker, are 7-3 since coming back from a week-long hiatus where, a ton of the team, of course, it was a huge outbreak of COVID, and they became one of the biggest stories of baseball, even without playing a game. Then they played and are still one of the biggest stories in baseball. They won 6 straight games. They have lost 2 in a row, so they're back to 7-3. But, heck, you know what? Let's enjoy this while it lasts. 7-3. I love that they've got that speed skater, Eddie Alvarez, who won a silver medal in the 2014 Winter Olympics. Jesus Aguilar, former home run champ, looks like he's found his stroke again. I'm going to enjoy it while it lasts. It's probably not going to last that long, but hey, it's a nice story for a team and a season that looked like when that outbreak happened was on the brink, and it's nice to see some guys getting a nice chance here in the Marlins, making the best of a bad situation.
Well, and it could be a situation where mentally you go into this season, you know, obviously guys opted out. You have the Buster Posey situation. You had Trout where he thought maybe, you know, he didn't know if he was going to play because he had a kid on the way who I think the kid just – he just had the kid, right,
yeah, basically? Just had his child, yeah.
So congrats to Trout. Mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe a situation where these guys are a little nervous to the point where, you know, mentally they're thinking about it and they're bats. Well, this team just went through it. So it's kind of like, I mean, a relief off of their shoulders. They've kind of went through the protocol situation. So now it's maybe like that week that they had, they mentally got right. They were ready to go, and they probably, you know, baseball got taken away from them, and now it's kind of back. So it's like they're maybe even more energized. I mean, Brian Anderson's always been one of my favorites because his cards came out, and he was always like the fifth or sixth guy. Nobody talked about him, but he had a really stellar rookie campaign, and he's building upon that. So that might be another sleeper guy that you might think about buying is Brian Anderson. The guy's batting over 300 right now.
He's got the next Yelich written all over.
Does he? Nice.
To me, he does. I think he's always been a really solid contributor. I think he goes to a team that contends as a really, you know, to a place where he maybe feels more comfortable. I could see him making maybe not the Yelich sized leap, but still making a leap and becoming a household type of household name.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's crazy. 7-3. So they were 7-1 at one point right after COVID. I mean, that is nuts. So
crazy. So I don't think it lasts, but you know what? It's fun. By the way, just a crazy stat throughout all of this. Don Mattingly became the winningest manager in Marlins history last week. How is that even possible? I thought maybe Jack McKeon might be that guy.
Wow.
Somewhere he's.
What's the win total for that winningest?
I think it was 242 wins. It's not much. It's like when Giancarlo Stanton became the Marlins' all-time leading home run hitter, passing Dan Uggla. I guess a win's a win. Oh, hey, whatever.
That's crazy.
Let's go to the last team I want to talk about here, the Los Angeles Angels. That picture says it all right there. If you didn't see it over the weekend, look, Joe Adell is going to be a really good baseball player. I don't think there's any question about it. He's going to be a very good player. But he had a rookie moment where he had maybe the first four base error since Jose Canseco's infamous home run off the head, where he was a Texas Ranger. And of course, ironically, the run benefited the Texas Rangers. Joe Adell going back on a ball. The ball pops in and out of his glove and over the fence. And if there's any moment that has better, symbolized the season for the Angels, it's that. They haven't been particularly bad. They haven't been particularly good, but they're losing a lot of games. They're 5-11 coming into today. Mike Trout's being Mike Trout, but Anthony Rendon is off to a really slow start. Shohei Ohtani's off to a slow start at the plate, and that's not even talking about his pitching game, where they've already shut him down for the season. He is not going to pitch another game for the Angels this year, so he is going to end his season with an ERA of 37.8 in 1 2/3 innings pitched. It's not been good. But I still think this team has enough talent to turn things around and salvage the season, especially with 8 playoff spots up for grabs in the American League. But, boy, that Mike Trout contract where you realize he's got that many years left and this team is trying so desperately to build talent around him and to build something around him, and it's just everything they do just seems to not work.
Yeah, and I mean, to speak on Joe Adell, huge prospect in our industry. Yeah. 2017 Bowman draft was his first auto, and there's rumors that somehow half of them got destroyed before the pack out, so they're very, very hard to get. I actually have 2 of them. I think we paid $1,000 just for the base, so we have 2 Joe Adells. You hate to see that happen. I know, you know, he may still, you know, obviously be a great player, maybe even one of the top players in the league. He's got a lot of hype behind him, but that will be a meme forever. I don't care. Yeah. He hits 4 home runs in a night. There's going to be some guy dropping that meme. And as a baseball player, I played baseball for 15 years, still casually play softball. Obviously, I'm nowhere near the talent of Joe Adell. But I put myself in the shoes. When you're going back on a ball and you have to do a pirouette, it's over. And that's what I think happened. He took a bad beat on the ball, did a little spin move to get right back on track, which he did get back on track. But I think it was like a, oh, God, situation. Put his glove up. off the palm, over the fence. I mean, it would not have been a home run. He definitely guided it near, or guided it over the fence. So you hate to see that as a Joe Adell collector. Hopefully, you know, he makes up for it. But, I mean, at what point can we say, you know, Mike Trout, obviously everybody says it and everybody's in agreement that Mike Trout is the best player in baseball. But if he goes his whole career without getting a playoff game, can you still say that?
Man, let's put it this way. I think Mike Trout has as many playoff hits as I do, which is none. That is rough. He had that one appearance against the Royals back, what was it, 2014, and they get swept. He is the best in baseball, but it is kind of remarkable. His career path is, in terms of just like on the field regular season success versus playoff success, is mirroring Barry Bonds right now.
Yeah.
Where Bonds just 4 years couldn't do it in the playoffs, and then eventually, you know, when he's in his late 30s, finally gets it done with at least some playoff success. Doesn't win it all, but you can at least say the guy can play in the playoffs. So.
Yeah, it would have been an MVP. I think he was batting over 400 that year with like seven postseason home runs.
Would have been the World Series MVP in a runaway, without question. So I hope that doesn't happen with Trout. He's such a spectacular player. But he's got, you know, an aging Albert Pujols as one of his main contributors throughout the start of his career here. Hopefully Rendon can turn it around. If he can, and Ohtani can figure it out at the plate, that's a very formidable middle of the order, especially with Joe Adell in there as well. But, man, this team's just got to figure it out.
Yep.
I think they've got the right manager to do it with Joe Maddon, but you just hate to see it keep happening for the best player in baseball. You want to see that guy succeed. I don't care who you are. For me, I want to see the best player in baseball succeed and be the face of baseball for a
me
reason.
Too. You know? And it was my pick, one of our hype right before the season. I picked the Angels to do it. I mean, there's still time, of course, but at 5-11 in the bottom of that division, I mean, you've got the Mariners ahead of them at this point, and then the shame tour with the Astros and then the A's, and then obviously the Rangers are doing better than them. So there's a lot of ground to make up, and everybody expected Ohtani to come back, and that's been a disappointment. The big Rendon signing, like you just mentioned. I mean, you had protection in that lineup for Trout. But Trout's remaining on course. I mean, what does he have, 6-7 home runs already?
He's doing just fine. He's being Mike Trout.
You just can't. I mean, his WAR is going to be higher than anybody in history, but he's not going to have any World Series rings. It's crazy.
Exactly. Well, to wrap things up for today, I think, I'm brand new here, still in just my third week. So I thought this would be a fun time for us to go over our favorite cards. I want to share some of my favorite cards, and then Doug, you'll share some of your favorites of all time.
Yep.
So let's get into it. I'd say my first year of really serious collecting, 2002, the Topps cards you see here. I think I had both of these cards, the Ichiro and Albert Pujols, the Rookie of the Year cards. This is the first year I got really, really into collecting. I like the design, nice and simple with this one, but the cards I loved were these ones. The Barry Bonds Chase for 73 cards that were part of this. I think I snagged maybe one of this collection when I was just buying packs with money I made. Me and my neighbor would mow lawns during the summer, and whatever we could get, or, you know, do whatever, some chores around the house. And at the end of every week, that Saturday, his dad or my dad would take us to the local card shop. We'd buy like three packs with the money we saved up. And that was like the highlight of our summer. And I was able to get one of these Barry Bonds home run cards in that pack. I was, and of course, as a Bonds fan, I was through the roof for those cards.
Absolutely. And, you know, that was one of the requirements to work here, is you got to like Barry Bonds, because if you don't, you don't join the team here at Mojo. No, but I actually had no idea he was going to say that. So that's amazing. I had a few of those, and there was also one, and I can't remember the year, but after he broke the all-time record, they actually had a card for each one of those all the way up to 756 too. So that was amazing. And I think those have like gone up. I had a few. I obviously it takes almost 800 cards to build that set, but yeah, very cool cards.
Yeah, loved those ones. And then the first year that – 1 year my dad and I said, you know what? My dad actually said for my birthday, hey, let's get a full factory set of cards. So that would be the 05 Topps baseball cards, which had some pretty good ones. I've got this one lying around somewhere, that Justin Verlander draft pick. That's probably the best of the set, or best player of that set. But that was the first year where we decided, you know what? Enough going to the store and getting cards. Let's get the real deal. Let's get a full box. So we've got a bunch to start the season. Of course, little did I know, as the season goes along, there's a lot more cards, a lot more boxes that are ready to be opened up as a young collector there. But that was I've still got that box laying around, I think, in my parents' garage. They nice. Got that one. So somewhere in there is that Justin Verlander
draft. And a lot of people forget that Andre Ethier actually got to start.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, of course. Yeah, with the A's. And I think that was what the guy was Carlos Gonzalez was also around that time with the A's. So they traded a lot of good outfielders for that.
I mean, Ethier didn't. He's not a Hall of Famer, but he's definitely was a solid player.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. All-star contributor a couple of years. Same with Gonzalez. So, A's could have had a lot more for those years. Then this next card is one I actually remember. I kind of stopped collecting cards for a little bit. And then one day I saw a story about, hey, there's these Derek Jeter cards with George W. Bush in the stands and Mickey Mantle in the dugout. And it was making the news, you know, and I thought, oh, that's funny. And then I think later that day, I just by chance went, oh, I saw that story about cards. I'm going to go buy one single pack of cards. And lo and behold, I opened it up.
Oh, my God.
And I got this card. I don't think it's worth as much as I thought it would be. I held it. I was like, oh, my God, I'm sitting on a grand right now. And it has not happened, clearly. But I think maybe certain types of this card might be worth something. But it's another one that I just like this one because it's so funny to me that somebody, you know, some trickster over at Topps decided I'm going to stick this in maybe on their last day where they decided to quit in a huff and they put George W. Bush and Mickey Mantle there. So I just like to envision that scenario.
Yeah, they must have made a lot of them because, I mean, they do sell for like $10, but
yeah,
They must have printed a bunch of them. They weren't necessarily an SSP, but I do remember that. That made national news.
Yeah.
So it was definitely whatever Topps was trying to do at that time, it did work.
So maybe, you know what? I'm starting to think it wasn't a mistake now.
Right.
Now that there's so many of them and that it made news, I'm starting to think this was all a big plot by Topps.
And was that during his presidency at that time?
That was the final year, I believe.
Okay,
so that was the 2007 collection.
You know, we had social media. If I remember, it was probably more MySpace at that time. Yeah. But if we would have had Twitter, I'm sure there would have. I mean, you can't do something like this now and be political. But back then, I think you could kind of get away with it a little bit more. Yeah. But right now, I'm done with Topps, all, you know, blah, 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 you know, if it was any kind of politics in the card.
Oh, yeah, 100%, 100%. But just still, opening that card
super cool.
Made me just crack up. I could not believe that I stumbled on it. And my last one here is not a card that was mine. I got a lot of hand-me-down cards when I first started collecting. My dad had a few. And this is one of my favorites, Willie Mays 3D 1971 out of a, like, box of cornflakes. These cards are a lot more rare than I thought, by the way, which is unfortunate because the card I have does not look that good. It's got a lot of it's bent a little bit. I think
cornflakes stuck to it.
Exactly. So it's a little unfortunate. I realized as I looked it up, but oh my gosh, if this was just kept in a little better care, I might be sitting on something special here. But this year especially, the more research I did, the hardest year to come by. Because they were basically only there were certain ones where you could mail in and you could get the whole set. And this one was like, you could only get it out of the box with the cereal.
Wow.
So a little more rare to find these ones. Unfortunately, a few creases in Willie Mays's face, were made.
So it'd be like a one, yours, maybe a 0.5.
Oh yeah, basically. Yeah. If that, a 0.25, if you even got that. Yeah. It's not in best shape. More of a sentimental favorite.
Definitely. Well, I have some cards, and this was a fun little segment for me to actually really kind of think because there's just so many I've seen. And I wanted to start with my actually, I just acquired one, a Gem Mint 10, probably paid too much for it. But the Topps traded Tiffany Barry Bonds for a few reasons. Obviously, I'm a Giants fan, but I love the Pirates hat. I mean, that was an iconic Pirates hat. Actually, like, you know, Willie Stargell kind of bridges the, you know, this generation with that 70s generation of Pirates. And, you know, just Barry Bonds is my favorite player. And the Tiffany was only like a mail order in set. And so it's a little bit more rare. It's got that gloss that people love these days. So that's probably one of my favorites. And then 1991 Stadium Club, Nolan Ryan in a tux doing the signature leg kick. This one I built my dad and me went to the local hobby store. We built the whole set pack by pack until we got all the whole set built. That was the year they had the Frank Thomas and the Jeff Bagwell rookie.
Wow.
And at the time, I think Frank Thomas was like $40, $50 on Beckett, you know. So and we had like eight of them and we thought we were going to retire and all this stuff. And but this card, I remember going like, that is cool because you just – it's not a game moment. It's
never
it's outside of – you know, you always see game photos. And Stadium Club, this was the first all full gloss card. Kodak was on the pack. So it was just – it looked great with the suit. It really kind of signified what Stadium Club is even today. And then my last one is kind of the one that got away. 2009, I bought – a box of this. I bought a Sterling back then in 2009 used to come with, it would be one master box would be six mini boxes and each mini box would have three autos. So each box would have 18 autos and it was all prospects. And I bought one off eBay for $50 and I got a Trout. And back then I went to my local card store and I was like, hey, is this guy Trout any good? He was a late first rounder. And the guy's like, yeah, he's pretty good. So I wound up selling it for $50. Which basically covered the cost of my pack. And now this card is like, I don't know, $9,000 or $10,000. But so it's the one that got away. But I do love the design. It was an early Trout auto. He doesn't sign his auto that way anymore. And just the embossing on that set was just fantastic. So those three cards are probably, at this moment, my three favorite cards.
Any card featuring Nolan Ryan in a tuxedo is okay with me.
those are always such a – I get such a kick. Like, forget what year it was, but one just random player just had a card with like a giant oversized glove, like toy glove.
Oh, yes.
And it was so weird. It wasn't like an all-star or anything, but he just decided I want a big giant novelty glove in my card. Like, it's so strange.
I know what card you're talking about. I can't think of the name, but – and then there was those – man, who made those posters back in the 80s? I want to say it was like the – something brothers or something, but they made like the Ryan Express.
And oh, on, like, yeah.
And he was on like a train. And then you had, you know, Will the Thrill. And
yeah,
it
was, like, I think there was one like. With like Will Clark and Kevin Mitchell.
Yep.
That was, I. You know what? It's funny. My senior year econ teacher had that poster up in his wall.
Nice.
With Kevin Mitchell and Will Clark. It's awesome.
And then they have the famous Bash Brothers one where they're on the field with they're in cop uniform with the big bats, Mark McGuire and Canseco.
Oh.
So those posters, I almost wish Topps or whoever could like redo those and make a set of those because those are awesome.
Yeah. If you're listening, Topps, the MLB tuxedo set, let's do it.
Just yep.
MLB players like looking like they're posing for prom. I'm all for that.
Sounds good.
Well, I think that'll just wrap things up here for this week's Mojo Break Dugout Session. Thanks so much for watching. Of course, make sure to subscribe to Mojo Break and, of course, the Mojo Break Media, Mojo Break Card Shop as well. But until next time, for Doug, I'm Cody, and we will see you on the next Mojo Break Dugout Session.